The end of the endless journey came abruptly and unexpected. Though Lawrence had marked off each day their progress and written estimates of distance and position in his log. This was for some time their only account, as neither Granby nor Rankin nor any aviator had any notion of keeping records, which Lawrence could even call barely adequate to serve as a proper second to his own, and Dorset kept voluminous and wholly useless notes on individual leaves or berries, or the paw of one animal, and could not tell which way was west if the sun were going down at the time. Lawrence put O'Day to the work experimentally, as the man at least could write a decent hand now that the rum had been sweated out of him, which did produce somewhat more successful accounts, if Lawrence would have preferred to do without such descriptions as "the blighted crimson of the earth here, which surely has drunk the blood of the heathen and unwary traveller, and yearns to taste still more," and the wholly unnecessary dramatization of "the loathsome creature gazed upon us long and meditatively, as if considering which to single out as its lawful prey, though the carcass of the offering lay before it limp and blood-stained from the slaughter, ere it chose the easier course and withdrew beneath the sands to devour the flesh of the kangaroo, and only dream instead of the satisfaction to be found in a repast accompanied by the piteous cries of a more sensible victim." They had come now more than 500 miles from the strange monolith, through the endless desert landscape, shifting only a little to be yet more parched. They were drawing nearer the equator, and the heat scarcely to be believed. Strange clouds raced overhead, and the sunsets vast and spectacular. They saw once in the distance two more plumes of fire, and endured half a dozen thunderstorms which sent water sheeting in violent cascades over the hard-baked ground, so the dragons had to leap aloft out of the torrents. They could not be sure of their position. One single survey could not necessarily be relied upon. There were no landmarks known, or any way to be sure of their approach. Their progress upon the map showed them steadily nearing the coast, however, and one morning they came upon a broad band of verdant green, stretching away in either direction along the banks of a riverbed, flowing vigorously. They cut its course again some 2 days later, and after this each day the countryside grew less dry, the red earth slowly vanishing from sight as the trees grew closer to one another, and water now more plentiful. They were flying through the night, the cool wind rushing in their faces, familiar and pleasant against Lawrence's eyes, half closing, and then Temeraire was descending, suddenly, to land upon the top of a low hill. Lawrence roused. The air was salt, and below them the moonlight was running silver across the water. A thin, shimmering road stretched out, vanishing to the dark horizon far away. The sound of the ocean came lapping clear and liquid up the slope towards them. And there were some lights down below, an encampment, perhaps, but there were many of them, and Lawrence thought perhaps even one or two out on the water from the bobbing motion. Night fishermen in canoes, most likely.
"We had better camp over here, and have a look in the morning before we go blundering in,"
Granby said, his voice kept low, not to carry. And Lawrence nodded. There was not much chance of hiding Temeraire or Iskierka, but they found a heap of rock which the dragons might curl themselves around and so have at least a little camouflage against a quick glance in the dark. They put up the small tents around them.
"It is something to think we have crossed the whole continent,"
Granby said thoughtfully, while they drank their tea.
"But, Lord, what a waste of time it would have been if the egg has already hatched."
"If it is not hatched," Rankin said, "I wonder what you propose to do to find it and extract it. You seem to imagine that only because we have found some native village, we have found the end of our search."
He stalked away to Caesar's side.
"Whether we have found the egg or not," Lawrence said, "I think we have found the end of our road. It must be hatched, or very soon, and when we have reached so clear a terminus, I hope they will not demand further pursuit so vainly."
He looked where Temeraire lay sleeping, silent but for the rasp of his breath. He slept by Temeraire's side. In the morning, roused and said tiredly,
"Yes,"
before he realized he was being looked over by a native man. Tall, with a curly beard gone a little to grey, he was otherwise built like a much younger man than his face would have had him, sinewy and muscled, with a spear held casually in hand. He wore a braided belt from which was slung a loincloth and nothing else. Two younger men, rather more wary, hung back a little way behind him.
"Lawrence, perhaps he has seen the egg or the other dragon," Temeraire said, peering interestedly down, which, despite the proximity of his teeth, did not seem to disconcert their visitor. "Have you?" he asked, and began to repeat his question over in French and in Chinese.
We will have to try and manage it with pantomime, and whatever O'Day and Shipley can work out of their language, if anything, Lawrence said, pulling himself up to Temeraire's back to see where the men had got to. Mr. O'Day, he called, and that gentleman turned and came down from the ridge, where he had been standing with several other of the convicts, looking down at the sea. Sir, O'Day said as he scrambled down, we should like to know if we have got to China properly at last. Certainly not. We have only reached the coast, Lawrence said. I had not thought to find you turned credulous, O'Day. You can read a map.
Well, Captain, O'Day said, I can, but I've seen Chinamen, too, and there are four of them down the hill there.
What?
Lawrence said as the native man answered Temeraire in fragmentary but recognizable Chinese.
Galand Lu says there are two dragons here, Temeraire said, turning his head around.
Lawrence caught hold of the harness and scrambled down from Temeraire's back and went to the top of the hill. Below, in the harbour, a small, narrow-hulled junk was floating at anchor with lanterns at her stern and bow, still lit in the early morning light. A small, open pavilion of wood and stone stood some distance up the shore, all the corners of the roof upturning towards the sky, with small dragons carved and crouching on every one.